We have gathered five of the top competitors in the Mid-6 Cash Game World Championship. In part one, they showed you how they prepared and performed in the challenge.
It honestly surprised me
how aggressive people were pre-flop.
People were just like bluffing way more.
Now in part two, they will review the road that got them there.
Yeah, so I'm not kidding when I say I think I had like 45 when one saw flop. My red line was in China. Like, things were not looking good for me.
Last year, when I first shot 1K and out, I think it was the most difficult period of time.
I had to move down the stakes and I couldn't climb back.
It was crazy. Like, I think I was playing and studying 80 to 100 hours a week. It was crazy. I was doing nothing else.
I made 4 WSOP final two tables. I never made a final table. And so, like, my whole live poker career has really come down to, like, 4 or 5 hands.
The struggle, the doubt, the breakthrough moments.
I think success is something related to happiness.
Poker just cannot be the only thing that you're doing, because when poker goes badly, your life goes badly, so...
I kind of realized that I should just stop chasing easy money in crypto and just focus on poker, which is what got me to where I was in the first place.
I want to win a, you know, significant live tournament, preferably at WSOP. I've always wanted a bracelet.
This is how they became who they are.
What I think would give me the most fulfillment is a...
What would you say was the lowest or most challenging part of your poker career?
Lowest moment coming up? Well, there have been several. I guess the first one I ever had was... In college, I was playing app games, like cash games on apps like Poker 2 and stuff like that. And at the time was doing really well. Its stakes from like 2.5 to 10.20 had grown my bankroll from basically nothing to a pretty decent level. And then I shot took a very big game for me at the time. Big game for me still. It was like a 5,100 game. And was a complete idiot with bankroll management at the time, and had at one point like 25% or 30% of my bankroll in play, and didn't sell for the game and ended up losing it. So I lost like close to a third, maybe like a quarter of my bankroll in one day in that game. And yeah, I was just pretty devastated emotionally at that. And from that point onwards, have been way, way better about being smart with bankroll management and, you know, making sure not to lose that much in one day. So that was the first sort of speed bump. And then in MTTs, I had very smooth sailing for the first 2 years of playing. Not really any downswings that were that significant. And then in around September of last year, there was a series going on and I just played way too high, fired way too hard, and ended up going on another pretty big downswing, around a quarter of my roll over 2 or 3 months. So sort of learned the same lesson again, but this time, you know, it was a lot more like a lot more of a calculated shot take as compared to the first one. So don't feel too bad about the second one. But yeah, those are, I guess, are the two biggest bumps in my road as a poker player.
Yeah, I'd like to dig into both those a bit deeper in terms of losing a third of your roll in one day. At that stage, yeah, your career must have felt pretty intense. How did you deal with that in that short-term period?
I don't know if I did anything like super proactive. At the moment, I just, you know, moved back down to my normal games on... and grinded it back up, and just sort of vowed to myself that I wouldn't let that happen again going forward. You know, would make sure to sell a reasonable amount next time I shot took a game that big. And you know, I was so young at the time, maybe 20 or 21, that I kind of felt like, you know, it's whatever. I can just shot take this huge game, and if it doesn't go well, I'll grind it back up. But yeah, I still don't think it was the smartest. But yeah, I just moved down and played my normal games for the next few months.
I think I'm kind of going through it for the last couple of years. because I had to move down the stakes and I couldn't climb back for a few reasons. I think the main thing is belief. Like, deep down, I know I'm not intelligent enough to beat the high stakes kind of thing. And also, I kind of feel I have to sacrifice too much in order to do it. It's kind of hard to balance to be like a top level athlete and like having a family, having a hobbies, having like some time off. So it's kind of a question of what you want more, I think. Yeah, and I keep reflecting on it. Like, I enjoy playing poker. I don't want to do anything else. I love the game, and I find the fulfillment in going deeper into one thing. And this is the thing I love. It makes sense for me to keep doing it. And I kind of want to achieve like mastery at the game, but at the same time, I keep not putting necessary effort for it. So, yeah, I need to think on it, reflect on it more.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of internal battle there in terms of...
Yeah, because it happened like right after the challenge that I was thinking, okay, like you play this game 15 years and you still kind of play it mid average level and like blah blah blah, like you're not good enough, blah blah blah, beating yourself to it, like my wife said fuck, you just won this thing and you are not happy that you won, because I was thinking 15 years and I still play like not still, but like I think my identity is attached to being a poker player, and it's like plays a huge part in my self-representation, and I probably would like to be like more, achieve something more. Yeah,
I think I've been just playing professionally for 2 years. I know poker from more time, but since I quit my last job, that I was like working in an office in a big law firm. It's been only 2 years. So during that time, I think I've been running really good. But last year, when I first shot 1K and up, I think it was the most difficult period of time in a 3 or 4 months period of time where I wasn't winning any money, maybe losing a little bit, but feel that all of the opponents were quite better than me. Like, I think the jump between 500 and 1K is so big, because in 1K, you have some players that just play from 1K to 5K or even more. And in 500 and now you have a lot of medium cash game stake players, which basically have my level during that time. So, also, in money-wise talking, I felt that the swings were affecting me a lot, and I need to like take a week or 2 weeks to not play during that time, because I wasn't playing right. Like, I was getting... I remember some of the wrecks that were just battering me were like showing me the showdowns for just for fun, or maybe because they want to show I'm the boss, you are just the new guy, we just entered this pool, this is what you have to do to play. And I was feeling like really bad at myself, kind of my ego was like suffering a little bit during that time, because I was like, okay, these guys are really good. So yeah, I think my rock bottom moment was that. And I think, yeah, I just took probably some weeks to rest, play lower stakes, build my confidence, study more. And yeah, I think, for example, now that almost 1 year or a little bit less have passed in that moment, I feel that I just improve in every spot of the game.
For me, the most challenging part of my poker career was definitely when I busted my role. I think right around a year into me playing poker full time. The first year that I played, I went from 2NL to actually being rolled and playing 200NL as my main game. It was during a time where party poker had really good rake back. You could get above 100% rake back for a time. And so even if I didn't have the best results pre-rake back, since rake back was so high, it was pretty comfortable to make good money. And I also wasn't very good at poker at the time. It was just an easier environment, I would say, to make money back then. And so when that got taken away, I transitioned to GG Poker. And I had a negative win rate pre-rake back, as I think a lot of people still do. But it was still winning after rake back, but it wasn't a big margin. And I felt like I was kind of at a dead end where I wasn't sure what to do to improve. And so that led me to looking into other things. Like I kind of got distracted with poker and I was looking into crypto. Long story short, I ended up trying to trade futures, and which is just like leveraged crypto trading, and I busted my role nearly entirely on that, as well as just having big expenses. At the time, I was renting two places, one in London, one in the Netherlands, and so before I knew it, like, both of these things kind of piled up on me, and I lost all the way down to like $120 I had left from, I think I had a 20,000 roll at the time before that point. So I busted like, yeah, 20K in just a few months.
This sounds like a painful experience. How did you recover from that? What was the moment you got yourself back on your feet, or how did you pick yourself up from that low point?
Yeah, so when this happened, I kind of realized that I should just stop chasing easy money in crypto and just focus on poker, which is what got me to where I was in the first place. So yeah, I had $120 and I just went to 10NL and I started grinding from there. So I remember the first day I played 10NL, I won 18 buy-ins and I had $300. I played there for, I started playing 25NL and I gradually built that up to a few thousand. At that point, I still wasn't like, I wasn't a very good poker player, to be honest. So I got to a point where, like, yeah, I was making money at 25NL. I built up a few thousand, but then I spent 2 or 3 months being stuck there where I just wasn't making money because I was shotting 100, losing my shot at 100NL, regrinding at 15L, 25NL, shotting again. The shot failed. This went on for a few months.
So your first year as a pro, you went on a 500 buy-in downswing. How was that experience and how did you get yourself out of that?
I binged the tournament for 400 buy-ins. Yeah, so yeah, I remember that. And I had a coach at the time that was pretty helpful because he was just like, you know what to do, just like keep going, you know you can win. And like we study and go through hands and just like keep making me believe that it was possible. So he was probably very helpful for me. Also, I just had a lot of friends who was just playing the same stake. So we were talking a lot at the same time. So I guess like just having friends and having a coach just made me sort of like at a time where I wasn't so experienced in that. And then throughout the end of the year, it was in 2020, I just, yeah, banked like a 20K score or something, 25K score. And yeah, was back on track. So that was very, very relieving to be like having such a big downswing. And yeah, also maybe like kind of understand variance a lot, you know, sort of like you see a lot of guys that have been running very hard in the start of their career and then they get a normal downswing and they just think they have like a huge downswing because they have been playing way too high for their bankroll.
What was keeping you going through these kind of sticky patches? What were you kind of aiming for? Did you have a certain level you were trying to get to? Did you have some expectations that you could keep climbing up? How were you able to keep pushing through these kind of slow starting periods?
Honestly, like, no, I actually didn't. After a while, I was kind of reaching a point where I was thinking, this might just be the end of the road for me with poker, because I'm trying, you know, I'm playing, I'm not even making much money. Like, if my prospect yearly is going to be maybe I make $20,000 or $30,000, I'd just rather do something else, because it wasn't even enjoyable for me at that point. So I was actually coming to a point where I was going to give it a few more months and then, yeah, pack it in.
Yeah, so the thing for me in poker has always been that I haven't had a plan B, because when I was in high school, I was like 16, 17, 18 years old. I already knew at that time that I would not go to university. So I was kind of like thinking, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not going to go to university, so I have to do something. And I didn't just want to have some normal job. I would be bored to help. So when I found poker and I knew it was possible to make a living out of poker, and I love playing poker so much, I kind of already knew, like, I wasn't really going to tell anyone, because everyone would just laugh. Like, if you're starting from the bottom and you will tell people that you're going to be a professional poker player, people will ask you if you have a problem or if you're like, they will start laughing, right? So it's like a silent sort of plan where I just knew, like, there's no plan B. This is what I'm going for. So even throughout this downswing, I didn't have any plan B. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go back to doing something else. Like, no, I was just no plan B. So this was just meant to be, sort of thing.
It reminds me of a quote from Will Smith. He says, there's no reason for a plan B because it distracts from plan A. And that was you, like, no distractions, and you're fully committed. With this, in terms of what you learned about yourself, I think you probably learned some valuable lessons throughout this downswing that probably set you up well for the rest of your career. Can you look back and think of anything that this downswing helped you for later on?
I mean, it made me respect variance. I do feel like I have a very good understanding of variance. I feel like I've talked with my friends about this, but I feel like we are all NPCs of the variance. Like, it's like some guys have been running above EV in their career, and they will think like, oh, my return on investment in this entity is gonna be 80%, and then there was gonna be guys that has been running not as well, and they will be thinking, hey, my return on investment is going to be 20%. And it's, you know, and sort of like people, when they're running hot or when they're running bad, it's sort of like their expectations of their return on investment in different entities is going to be changing. I'm talking in live entities here in general, right?
What was the turning point for you when you realized that you maybe had absorbed enough knowledge to become a good player yourself and you weren't just following your coach's advice?
Yeah, so like, I mean, I learned very quickly, right? Because we had like, I think we had two sessions every week, so I was like playing a lot, and then we like went through the hands a lot. So very quickly I started getting it, right? So like my improvement went up a lot in the beginning. And then I think our deal just went from maybe it was a month at a time or 2 months or 3 months at a time. So just like at a point where I was like, okay, now I'm at a very decent level. I can go for myself. And I made my coach some money. That's very nice. And we made some money together. We still have a good relationship. So now I'll just go on my own because I have the knowledge and sort of like confidence that I can see about what's going on.
I think what gives me, like I've been realizing what I think would give me the most fulfillment is achieving sort of mastery, excellence at your craft, and this level is not what I consider to be like being like a master of my craft. Like also playing higher stakes has its own caveats. I've been playing past few weeks 1K, 2K, and it's just not many games running, and I'm kind of in a good time zone, so it's quite upsetting. So it's kind of, you don't see where to go. Like 10 years ago, you can see like lobby full of, maybe 15 years ago, you can see a lobby full of 5K tables. Like, so it's basically there is nowhere to play higher. And if you play higher, you would have to compete with the best. So it's kind of a risky thing to do as well. Can take a huge toll on a bankroll. And it's not something which you have full control on because of the huge variance with the synergies. So it's a tricky thing. But I still enjoy just the grind, you know, like it usually like when I smoke pot on or take shrooms, like I am actually enjoying my lifestyle, but on some other days, like I'm kind of beating myself up that I'm not putting much effort, blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of goes phases.
Are you grinding hard, studying solvers, reviewing hands, but still not getting those results that you know you're capable of? You're putting in the time and effort, but without clear direction, that effort does not pay off. That is why I created the Mechanics Leak Buster program, which is the exact system I use to make over 7 figures playing online poker and have since taught to hundreds of students so they could do the same. Through our leak finder stats and pop-ups, you will gain clarity on your biggest leaks and tendencies, insights on how your strategies have been performing in-game, and the impact variance has had on your results. But knowing your stats is only the beginning. In the program, we dig deep into the root causes behind your leaks and tendencies and use a proven 7-step system to fix them for good and gain the skills to improve and continuously evolve as a poker player. You'll study more effectively, overcome leaks and tendencies that felt impossible to break, and rebuild trust and confidence in your game, finally seeing your hard work pay off as you move up the stakes. So if you're ready to stop guessing and start improving with clarity, break through the patterns that have been holding you back, and take your game to the next level, join the Mechanics Leak Buster program using the link down below. And for the first month of enrollment only, you will get access to weekly group coaching calls with me and get a chance to win a one-on-one coaching session in which I personally review your game. So don't miss out on this limited opportunity. Join the Mechanics Leak Buster program using the link down below, and looking forward to seeing you guys in there.
You describe yourself as someone who's self-confidence and you believe that with enough effort and study, you can get to the top. What gave you that confidence? Is there something from your childhood, or has that always been a part of your character traits?
Yeah, I think it's come from my childhood. I've been a really good student all of my life, like from school, also from my university studies. So I think I have this conviction that when I put effort in some things of my life, I will have good results. I also want to thank to my family for teaching me that. From where I remember, my mother and my father will always be really strict for me to always study and have good marks at the school. So I think my confidence comes from there, because I have done a lot of things in my life where I basically studied a topic where I have studied a lot or have put a lot of effort, and then I was compensated by having good results. So I have the confidence that I could do that the same with poker. If I just study like good regs do, I will have good results in the future, because I think overall you have to play good and the state of mind is really important. But most of the guys who are just crushers is because they just study more and they are better players. Like, there's no too many special talents. Like, I think poker is kind of a sport in that kind of stuff. Like, if you train more, you're probably getting better. So I think it's quite the same.
Yeah, it seems like you don't overthink about things and you have got a high tolerance for risk. How did you develop that? Have you always been a bit of a fearless risk taker, or has poker kind of instilled that in you over time?
I think poker has drilled that into me over time. Maybe a bit of it is natural, but yeah. Actually, now I think I'm on the nittier side among my MTT friends in terms of like how how big I play for my bankroll and how, you know, how hard I fire. So yeah, over time I've actually skewed more towards the netty side. But yeah, when I was younger, I definitely had that risk taking ability. Maybe too much of it even.
Any examples of where it became a negative trait where you took on too much risk other than this lose a third of your role?
No, I think just those two really. I mean, I've never loved risk taking in like other areas. Like I don't enjoy, you know, gambling at casinos or sports betting or anything like that. Just in poker, like if I think I have an edge, I like to try to push it as far as I can.
Why did you choose poker as a career? What attracted you to the game and what were those early motives to do?
Well, I think I found out kind of an activity or a job that where I have this competitive side of me that I like, which is related to sports, but also a job that gives me the freedom to be able to live a life that I like. Also, in economic terms, if you do well in poker, it's a job that is really well paid compared to many other areas. But also, I love being able to organize myself and to be like the boss of my time, you can say. So poker is it's a thing that I love too much, but not only because of the game, which strategically talking is really interesting, but also because it gives you the opportunity to be able to do many things at the same time, to be able to play with my friends every day at paddle because I have the right time to do it, because I can organize myself. So yeah, I think that all of these kind of stuff, I found out that poker had everything and it gives me this energy to, yeah, give a shot to poker or be all in poker 2 years ago.
So in college, I just started playing with friends for fun and then moved over to the apps. And what attracted me was just that I loved the game and I could make a fair bit of money doing it. I liked the lifestyle it offered, the freedom and, you know, not having to listen to anyone else. And I actually took an internship in college in trading, options trading, and was playing poker at the time. And I realized every day at work, I'm just kind of looking forward to coming home and playing poker. So that was a sign to me, like, this is what I love to do. So I'm just going to do that instead of trying to force myself into a path that I don't enjoy as much.
What were some of the early signs that you were on the right path? And did you have any moments of doubt where you thought, this might be a bit for me?
Early signs that I was on the right path, I guess, would just be that I was having pretty decent success in cash games. I mean, the apps were very lucrative in the early days, like during COVID and stuff. And I played a bit on this American site, Ignition, and had great results in cash there. And I always had a pretty unique style, sort of redline focused style that no one else in my circles had. So they were all sort of, you know, captivated by the way I was playing and said, like, you know, you have a really unique style that's working. You should, you know, keep improving this and see where it'll take you.
What helps you to stay confident and maintain your belief, especially when you do have that quite unique aggressive style? Is there moments where you maybe feel like you're pushing it to extremes?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, my style has insanely high variance. And so what you just said is very important. For me in tournaments, I just kind of use my graph in BB per 100 as sort of my North Star to make sure that I'm on the right track. So like when I had my big downswing in September, I would check that, you know, every week or so to make sure I'm still having a decent win rate in big blinds per 100, because in tournaments, obviously you can't look at, you know, results in dollars over any short sample because it's pretty meaningless. So I just check that, you know, have better players review my hands, make sure I'm not doing anything too crazy, and, yeah, just trying to stay the course regardless of what happens.
A quick way to make money was the main motivation. So, and it sucks because it's not the kind of motivation which leads to great success in life. I think I've started to really love and appreciate the game quite later on into my career. Maybe like I hit some sort of an existential crisis at 2019, 2020. And I just had to see it in a different lens, not just as a way to earn money, but like kind of to see the beauty of the game and stuff like this. Also, I want to add like what attracted me in the poker, just realized, besides the money, it's I always been attracted to unconventional stuff, and I really enjoy to take like not the mainstream road. So the poker at that time and at the place I was seemed like the most unconventional I can take. So I really loved that. And also it's freedom. I love that I can construct my life however I see fit, and I don't have to rely on anyone except poker sets, not increasing rake too much.
Yeah, I guess, so my cousin, he was playing at a somewhat decent level, not professionally, but like at a decent level. And I spent a lot of time with my cousin. And so, I mean, in the start, it was just exciting, you know, playing this game for money. And we were like, I was like watching him play, and like he was watching me play. And that was just like very exciting. And then he helped me a lot in the beginning and just made me like understand the game. And we played together, played with friends. And so, yeah, that was just like the start. And then I like sort of like figured out like these pros that makes a lot of money from this game. And it was just like exciting to sort of like understand that there was people getting so good at this game that they could just make a living out of it. That was just like very exciting to me.
Was there anything that you had challenges with mindset-wise or approach to the game that caused you frustrations or difficulties early on?
I mean, to be honest, I don't think I'm that good at taking losses, like compared to some of my friends at least. So that's also why I don't play higher. Like I could be playing higher, but I just have been experienced that the losses impact me pretty negatively compared to winning, you know? So that trade-off, I haven't been too willing to take a lot of compared to other guys. Like I have a friend that he's just like, he's taking off way more variance, but he can just sort of like strop it all off better, and he can sort of like get into the mindset of like, he just have like points and he's like, now I have less points, now I have more points. And where for me, it's, I get a little bit more like negative attached to the losses. So
what is it about losing that impacts you?
I don't know. It's probably some resentment kind of thing. Like, I know I should be winning. Now I'm losing. I see this guy winning. I feel like I'm better than them. And I feel like that's, yeah, some kind of like resentment thing. Yeah.
What about the monetary values? You mentioned you don't play higher because you don't want to take the swings like some of your friends. What's your kind of risk tolerance, and how do you deal with losing big sums of money or relatively large amounts?
Dropping down in stakes. But I mean, that's kind of the reason why I switched to cash. So the start of my career, I only played MTTs. And then the last couple of years, I did like switch to cash because I wanted to get good at cash. So because I knew I could play and there will be less variance, right? You see that I had a 500 PB downswing, and here in cash, like it's going to be very tough to have like 50 blinds downswing, right? So for that reason, also like the lifestyle, but yeah, so that was actually the reason why I sort of like switched to cash. Like I wanted to be good at it also. I did enjoy it, and I just, you know, liked the less variance and the more free lifestyle of it.
Probably dealing with mistakes, I think, is my the thing that I feel more difficult to lead. Because I'm someone that I'm really competitive and don't like to make mistakes. Because, yeah, I have kind of, as I told you before, I'm really confident in myself and probably have not crazy, but big ego of myself, which I consider I'm good. When I make mistakes, I know that there are people that are better than me, and I don't want them to know that. I want to feel that I can control the game, that I can control my skills, and that I can control that I will be better than them, better than any opponent. So by making mistakes, you feel that, okay, this is not happening. Maybe my plan of being able to reach 1K NL is not in a good way because they are not making a stand, I am doing. So basically, this is the thing that I have to deal better, not just in the past, but also in the future, because everyone, even David Jones, will make some mistakes in a few sessions. So it's just the way you deal with them and how to approach your next session that will explain if you are going to become a better player or not.
I think I'm just naturally optimistic person. So I was just always like, it will work out. My mindset kind of was like, whatever. Yeah, I didn't have like a huge belief in myself. I always was just being a little bit more on the optimistic side of things. So I was never scared to take shots because I always think they will go well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, whenever I'm going through a rough patch, my natural instinct or response is to just play more, try to play my way out of it, just keep showing up to work and grinding through it. Actually, when I'm winning a ton, I want to just go on vacation and drink a cocktail on a beach somewhere and chill when I'm winning a lot. But when I'm losing, I want to, you know, just show up and grind my way out of it.
Is there any mindset difference you notice in playing tournaments compared to playing cash? And a lot of people think tournaments are more challenging on the mindset. How have you dealt with both?
Yeah, I mean, tournaments, the variance is just exponentially, like, I don't even know how much higher the variance is in tournaments compared to cash, but it's huge. I mean, live tournaments especially, it's like, I played this whole summer at WSOP, maybe 60 bullets, and that's like 1.5 Sundays or something. So it's like, when 2 months equate to 1.5 Sundays, you really have to keep that in perspective and zoom out and realize, like, this is just a drop in the bucket. And you really have to just focus on playing the next hand well. Like, for me, that's what it all boils down to. I sit down and I think to myself, how can I play the next hand well? Because if you get too caught up in, oh, how did I do this week or this month or whatever, you're really just going to mess yourself up mentally.
Yeah, I love that. How challenging is that in practice, especially when maybe you're on a series, you've got some big final tables, you was bust out of some maybe life-changing big prizes up top. How do you then just switch it up next tournament back to that next hand?
It's hard. It's incredibly hard. I'm always shocked at guys who will, you know, bubble a 50K tournament and then immediately jump into like a $1,500 tournament, you know, 20 minutes later, no problem. But if you look at the guys who do that, they're the ones who are some of the best, you know, like they're the ones who have the results over 10 years and who have had staying power in the poker world. And you know, it's hard to do in practice, but like for me, I've made 4 WSOP final 2 tables and never made a final table. And so like my whole live poker career has really come down to like 4 or 5 hands. And if 2 or 3 of those go slightly differently, then, you know, maybe I even have a bracelet by now. So it's like, you know, you show up every day trying to get one of those chances, and then whether or not it goes your way is out of your control a lot of times. But it's your job to keep showing up and try to get those chances.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, when you say that your whole life career came down to 4 or 5 hands in terms of potentially getting a bracelet and the impact of that. And you can take that 2 ways. You can have a negative victim story around that. If I just ran good in these hands, all you just go, right, my job's to put myself in more opportunities to go again and to create more chances for that to happen. Yeah, this links in well actually with your big breakthrough. I'm guessing it was your big breakthrough where you had a pretty crazy Sunday. Can you talk us through that day back in 2023?
Yeah, so I think it was in January. I'd been playing MTTs maybe a few months at this point, but I'd had one six-figure score before then, but still hadn't really fully broken out in the MTT world. And I ended up winning on this Sunday, the ACR Sunday High Roller, for a bit over 100,000. And then I think the GG High Roller, the GG Masters 1050 for like 130,000, maybe 140, something like that. But yeah, I won the two Sunday majors in the same day, and just felt like I had finally broken through. Like, I think I doubled my bankroll at that time, close to doubled. And, you know, at that point could play the stakes I was playing super comfortably. And yeah, it just felt amazing to get that breakthrough.
How did that change things? Because I'm guessing on one side, obviously, you've got the bankroll to play higher stakes, but also you've got this kind of God mode, top of the world, I can just take down everything to deal with. So how did that impact you going forward? Do you feel like there was a bit of recklessness kicked in, or was it all positives in terms of game selection opportunities?
You know, maybe a bit of winner's tilt, but I think it was mostly positives. Like, I felt like my decision to play poker was a lot more validated. You know, it's sort of a crazy thing to do after college. So getting that pretty early after I graduated gave me confidence in what I was doing, gave me confidence that I had potential to rise towards the top in the MTT world. And it gave me even more motivation because I wanted to achieve more things like that because of how good it felt. So yeah, I think almost all positives.
Actually, I wanted to actually add one question. Mm-hmm. What do you have to do more and less of when you go play live compared to online, and what are kind of the adjustments? Why is it different?
Well, I think the biggest thing, or one of the biggest differences between live and online, is the proportion of recreationals in the pool. Online at higher stakes, it's very rare to find more than, you know, one recreational at the table. Compared to live, you know, you can have tables where all of the other players are recreationals. So what does that mean? That means that the skill set you need in live is to try to extract the maximum, you know, from amateur players and try to exploit as much as possible. And online is a lot more about playing a theoretically solid game. I mean, you still want to deviate a lot against regs, but the deviations are much smaller. So yeah, online is a lot more of a theoretical, solid game for me, whereas live is a lot more freestyling. And then there's obviously the element of, you know, live reads and, you know, trying to gain information about people's hands by looking at them and paying attention to how they're acting. So yeah, I think those are the two biggest differences for me.
If you're looking to level up your poker game, let me tell you about GTO Wizard. It's got everything you need in order to improve as a poker player, whether you're just starting out or already crushing it. You got tools like a hand history analyzer, a GTO trainer, and even custom drills to help you sharpen up your skills and make smarter plays. It's what so many of the guests we have had on are using in order to dominate cash games and tournaments. Get started for free and get 10% off your first purchase using the link down below, gtowizard.com/mechanics. If you sign up, you also get access to the weekly coaching webinars, where you can learn from me and other great coaches. So looking forward on educating you guys over there.
Parts of everyone's career where you look back on and you're glad it's over, but often there's a lot of valuable lessons to be learned from those periods. So for yourself, talk us through like what you learned about yourself during your biggest downswings.
My biggest downswings, my biggest one was when I played a cheated game at 10K. I jumped into 3 max game with some unknown guy. So I just thought that it's some sort of weak rec, but the table didn't fill up. So as I later on learned, it was some entity player. So I lost like maybe 150k in a couple days in this game. And it was a lot at that time. And it took me, I think it also coincided with a Bitcoin crash, which added a kind of another huge amount on top of that. So I think it was the worst in terms of monetary things in my life. But how I dealt with that? I didn't deal well with it. I don't know, just kept grinding, climbed, win it back. I think it happened at the same year I had the best months in my career. What I learned through this period. I had many periods like with a huge swings, because when you play like a low win rate, you have quite a few of those. So throughout my career, like you just develop kind of resilience for the things you can control and what you cannot control, and try to focus on those. I think what I did or what I was always doing well is kind of know when to move down, not busting more in a bad state, just stop, maybe like stop reacquiring and table select a bit more and things like that.
So overall, I've been pretty fortunate, to be fair, with the shots I have taken. Like, I made most of my money now probably in games I actually was shot taking. I have had like downswings as well. Thankfully for me, when I did downswing in big games, it was after I'd already upswung, and so it hurt a lot less. Like I've had a month where I retraced 100,000 before, where I was doing well at like 50, 100, and then I'd just lose free buy-ins at 100, 200, and then like wipe out most of my profits. So I've had swings like this, but to be fair, I've not actually had a downswing where I just entered the high stakes games and immediately downswung a significant amount. It was always after an upswing.
What do you do when you notice that mistakes are getting a little bit on top of you? What's your kind of process you go through to make them a proactive learning experience?
Well, I'm quite happy you asked that, because I have poker coach which helped me a lot with that. He's always caring about me in these kind of situations. Overall, he always said me that to look in a long-term basis. Like, for example, I play, I think, more than 1 million hands in these 2 years. I'm a winner. You can see that I have positive win rate. So when you have bad days, so when you just feel you're making a lot of mistakes and you probably feel kind of a bad player, when you take the overall scope and you see what happened in the past, you have done a lot of things good and probably better than most of the opponents. I think that gives you again the motivation and the confidence to be able to pass this mental breakdown you have, to be able to in the next session play at least better than the last day.
When did you finally get the belief that you've got what it takes, that you're on the right path and there's no looking back?
Yeah, so I'm not kidding when I say I think I had like 45 when went so flop. My red line was in China. Like, things were not looking good for me. And then once I looked at the NDA material, I had a month at 100 now where the first month I won like $18,000. So my net worth like quadrupled. I was back to where I was before I busted my roll. And I think I won like 90 buy-ins of red line in that month. So I just had, it was such an immediate shift. It happened very fast. And it just felt like, yeah, things are going to be better from here.
From there, that initial success or that big kind of breakthrough month you had, how did that impact your mindset going forward? Did you start thinking about playing higher stakes? Did you start getting carried away? Was there any kind of negative sides of having success coming relatively quickly in that short space there?
No, to be honest, I feel like the experience of going broke was so negative for me that it scared me of ever doing anything again to risk going broke. So like, I've honestly been a very big bankroll net since that point throughout my career. So had this very big month at 100 and L. The rig back then was still very decent on Party Poker. I think I was getting like 80%. So I had no incentive to do anything differently because I was able to 6 or 9 table, and after rig back win like 11 big blinds per 100. So, and this is in the Zoom format. So I was actually making like close to $150 an hour there without much variance at all. I had no incentive to try and shot higher because if I moved to reg tables, I'd have to be playing like probably a mix of 500 and 1K and L to get a similar hourly. So I just had no incentive to move up. And I kept grinding those games for a good amount of time.
How did you train yourself to play 6 to 9 tables? Were you always kind of a high volume, high table player? Or was that something you had to learn as you went at the stakes?
No, it's actually like, it's a skill that I trained. And I think that it's, maybe it's not an underrated skill anymore because I think rake back grinding is somewhat dead now. I don't really see where that exists. But so I went from being a 2 Zoom tables player. That was my base. And then when I moved over to Party and I saw they had these leaderboards and this rake back where if you 9 table for 12 hours in a day, you can get 150-200% rake back. So I remember what I did at the time to get good at playing more tables was I immediately started playing 6 Zoom tables and then 6 rec tables at a time. And I think I was, this is at 50 and L, I was losing at like 10 big blinds per 100 doing this. But then the rake back was like 8 big blinds, so it wasn't really much. And I just kept doing it. And then after a week, I think I got down to like -6, which was probably even winning after rake back with the structure they had back then. And then I kept doing it and I managed to get it down to like -4. And then I shot 100 FF and I had -2 big blinds for like 150,000 hands there, which is winning a lot after rake back. And once they cut leaderboards and I went to playing other sites, there wasn't really this incentive to play so many tables. But what I found was because I had played so many tables before, when I went to 4 tabling Zoom or like 6 tabling rec tables after, it felt so much easier than it did before, like, or compared to 9 tabling. So I feel like by actually just playing an absurd amount of hands per hour, it made playing like still pretty reasonable volume. It made it feel quite easy actually, comparatively.
Do you think it's a skill anyone can train? Do you feel like your starting point, if other players try to replicate that kind of playing these kind of 12 tables, struggling to keep up, but then over time kind of speed, getting their mind to speed up with decision making, do you feel like it's a process a lot of players could go through? And do you feel like there's, even without as many leaderboard chases or rakeback deals, do you feel like it's still a useful skill for players to invest in?
Yeah, so I think this is where like I do have a strong opinion on it, and I know it's contrary to like what a lot of people will say, and I don't really know what the right answer is. I can only say what I think on the matter. I think it's definitely like less important to want to play crazy volume now that the rake back just isn't there and you don't need to like rake a certain threshold to get the good rake back. So it's definitely true that there's less incentive. But at the same time, I do think that everyone should be able to play. Like I would honestly say at least 6 rec tables at once. Because otherwise, I think long term, you are just going to miss EV if you're not comfortable doing that. I think it gets different at the higher end. Like if you're just playing 2K now and higher, maybe you just want to pay more attention to spots against better opponents. But I think it's a skill that, yes, I think probably anyone could learn it if they put in the time. For example, a friend of mine who used to rake back grind these leaderboards, he used to CFP some students, and what he said he would make them do the first month they joined with him was he would make them play 300,000 hands in a month as like a requirement, because then afterwards he would say you can just play 50,000 hands a month, and they would find it really easy to do because they played so many hands the first month, which is obviously an extreme way of doing it, but I understand the logic. And you know, I think the skill is still valuable. I think it's still valuable to be able to play more tables, definitely.
I also see actually a lot of value in actually it's a very good idea actually. Like, because if you do that, if you tell them to play 300K hands, you will also, and if you would then analyze the data, you will see like the worst of their game probably, like their C game. So, and this is where you usually just want to start. Okay, let's solidify what's really bad. And I think if you play this many tables, you know, what comes out is just your natural lens through which you see the game. All your biases will be shown in your stats. So you can, you see immediately the root cause of any future problem will probably come from this data that you now collected. So I think not only indeed does it make future volume easier, it's like training with extra weight, right? And then when the match is there, you take off the weight, it's like, oh, it's, I feel very light, it's very easy. But like I said, I think for gathering data on what's probably the root cause of any future problem that you will have, right? Because it shows your natural bias. I think it's very, any coach listening, I think is gonna do something with this information for sure.
Yeah, I like it. I agree as well. I feel like for the most part, there's a lot of positives from putting yourself in that high stress situation to get used to playing more tables, more hands. And then when you scale it down, it feels a lot less. And like Renee was saying, like, a lot of things will come up in that sample. One of the pushbacks could be you could ingrain a lot of bad habits in 3,000 hands that you need to then work on undoing. But yeah, overall, it feels like the ability to turn it on, I feel like that's often underrated. The ability to play more tables if you need to play more volume if you need to. Because there's spots in poker where it just makes sense to go beast mode and to be able to not cap yourself on tables and volume. So if you train that skill set, you're going to be in a good position. For you personally, do you feel like you had any... maybe slowing down your growth by going for the rake back approach? I know for myself, I did Simulator Elite for 3 years in a row. And there's a few years, at least the last year and a half, where I was probably slowing myself down from going to the higher stakes, from playing so much volume because I couldn't study enough and I was just, yeah, chasing rake back basically. Do you feel like it maybe slowed you down in any ways, or was there any negatives from going from the high volume approach?
Okay, yeah. This is an interesting topic and I've thought quite a bit about it. I would say no. For me personally, and the reason is because I think that the thing that actually stops people from playing high stakes, I think there's two things. Part of it is obviously going to be your ability as a player, how well you perform. It's always going to be a very important aspect. But I personally think that once you reach a threshold of how good you are as a player, it's going to be bankroll that's actually stopping you from playing higher. Like, the best games I've ever played in my life have been at 20,000 NL, like softer than 10 NL games that I've played. And I think that like people not being able to play those games, it's not an issue of skill, it's just an issue of bankroll. And so I think that what people often neglect, especially guys that maybe they're years into playing poker and they don't actually have a bankroll that's bigger than like 150,000-200,000, I think they're focusing too much attention on playing solid, playing good, playing less volume, and not actually just building money to be able to play in games where the rake is lower, where it's a really good spot, where if they're just playing good against the recreational, you know, even if they're losing a bit to the other regs, it's not enough to not make them very profitable in those spots. So I definitely think it's a neglected aspect for sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, almost like bankroll is an opportunity to play bigger games. I think also from a mindset perspective, having a large bankroll for the games you're playing puts you at so much ease. The swings you can deal with so much better when you're not like worried about how many buys you've lost relative to your role. You mentioned like some of your best games playing 20k NL. It got me thinking how you handle risk when you're making those big shots at those higher buy-ins. Yes, you've got the role for it, but a few buy-in swings at those stakes could make or break your year basically. So how do you deal with, one, taking on those opportunities, and then if they don't go well, how do you kind of recalibrate your expectations?
So if I'm going to take a big shot, which I've done a few times in the last, only the last year, to be honest, because I made the transition from just playing mid stakes to actually trying to play higher around September of last year. I would say that the thought process behind taking a shot for me is always, what do I actually think my win rate would be at that table? And if it's double digits, then and the shot isn't going to affect the games I have to play on a regular basis, then I always decided to just take the shot, because I felt like the opportunity cost of not taking the spot when it shows is too much. And I would always do it in a controlled way as well. So for example, on ACR, there were some like really, really insane spots at high stakes. There's kind of a weird format. It's called No Rattle, where you buy in for 10 big blinds. So there was, for example, one table is 200, 400, but you only buy in for 10 big blinds. And there was a recreational there. I don't know how much he lost. He probably lost close to $80,000 that session. And so I viewed it as like, okay, I'm buying in for 10 big blinds, it's $8,000. Realistically, it's $4,000. If I lose here, like, you know, 20, 30K, it's actually not going to affect me being able to play the games I would usually play anyways. Yes, it might mean that I'm not going to be making money for the next few months because I'm regrinding my losses. But if the shot goes well, then, you know, I can take another shot at a good high stakes game if it appears. So for me, I just always viewed up the risk to reward and how much losing would actually affect my lifestyle or my mindset. And if it felt worth taking the shot, I would take it.
How did you end up being this high volume guy? Because I know some people struggle with volume and they will never be a high volume person. And other players can either choose either to be a high volume player or play more quality. So for you, how did you end up becoming this kind of Supernova League grinder?
I think it was just a natural thing for me to do. I kind of liked this high-paced environment of playing many tables, like a constant action. But I never played a lot of hours. Like even when I was a Supernova Elite, I played 120 hours on average during the month, maybe even less, just because at 24 tables, at 400, 600 stakes, you can do it. You don't have to push that much. I wouldn't say what was kind of the grinder who puts like a lot of hours, just had an ability to execute a somewhat decent strategy at a lot of tables. But I always played with, I sacrificed a lot of win rate for this. During this time I was break even, and even after that I never played with high win rate. I think my best 5-year stretch was like 4 BB win rate. So now I was a crusher. I think it's just some cap on myself as well. Some sort of mindset I had developed about myself.
If you want to focus more while playing, let me tell you guys about Brain FM. This is actually something I stumbled on prior to the World Championship, and it's been what I've been listening to for hours and hours straight while playing. It's music specifically designed to help you focus. Personally, I have ADHD. They have a special function where they play sound that interacts very well with your brain waves, helping you to focus. And it's been something that I've been listening to and using for doing work or playing poker, and it has definitely changed my focus and helped my game. So I wanted to inform you guys on this opportunity. Link down below, 1 free month trial, and let me know how you like it.
Actually, a guy like a Rick Nimrod, he sent me a YouTube video of some, it's called like 3 p.m. study with me, where it's like rain sounds and thing, and he said he got it from you.
I've been doing it a lot ever since, and it has helped a lot for me as well. It really can get you in the zone, and also this thing, yeah, like I put it on and I just know for the next 3 hours I'm locked in, like I know now. And that's like 3 hours is kind of like a nice time, you know, where you just know like now it's time to go.
If you look at how you approach poker back then when you started compared to how you approach it now, what are the main shifts that stand out?
I guess just the importance of having something else than poker in your life. Like poker just cannot be the only thing that you're doing, because when poker goes badly, your life goes badly. So having something else, I feel like I've been pretty good at that. I live here in Denmark, and I feel like if I went to like another country that would be better for my career, I feel like I would probably be too attached to just poker, right? But here I have a lot of non-poker friends and I see them a lot, and
I sort of kind of attached myself a lot to from playing poker to just like being with my friends and having fun with them. So yeah, just don't take it too serious and don't attach yourself too much to it.
You said you don't get much fulfillment out of poker these days. What does give you fulfillment?
It's a good question. I guess what gives me fulfillment is if I feel like I'm working towards things that are important to me long term. So like I have a good relationship with my girlfriend. The prospect of being able to build a family one day fulfills me, even if I'm not doing it right now. If I feel like I'm making decisions that kind of put me further towards my long-term goals, that's fulfilling to me.
Why do you feel like poker doesn't quite do that at the moment for you?
After a certain point, it's like if you know or you feel confident that you have a win rate in certain games or against very good players, there's not really this element of wanting to improve to be able to beat certain people. I'm not saying I'm like the best in the world, or I don't think I'm close, but I think I'm good enough to like beat the games I want to beat, and I've achieved the things I wanted to achieve. And so it's like past that point, it's just playing to make money. And it kind of becomes repetitive and dull if that's the only thing, which is fine, like, because it's a good living and it still has its moments of creativity and whatnot. But it definitely becomes this thing where it's like you pour all this time into it to make money. Like, yes, it's good, but why would I feel ambitious about doing that more? It just kind of seems empty to me.
What are the biggest things still left for you to achieve? What's the highest things that you look towards at the start of a year that you still set?
Well, I need to win a live tournament. I've won like a $200 live tournament or something, but I don't count that. I want to win a, you know, significant live tournament, preferably at WSOP. I've always wanted a bracelet. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And then also I would say to play some Trident series one day would be one of my goals. I've considered it, but I don't think it makes that much sense for me right now where I'm at bankroll wise. And yeah, I've always been a big fan of keeping all my own action, you know, as much as possible. So
why do you feel like you want or need one of those big live wins? Is it to kind of validate the work you've put in, or is it just a competitive drive to want to get that next thing?
Well, I mean, live to me feels almost like a different game than online. I mean, they're both poker, but the skill sets required are much different. So I sort of just want to prove myself in both arenas. And show people that I'm not just an online player.
As you mentioned, there's so much variance live and it comes down to a certain amount of hands. How would you feel if the score never came, the big score live?
Sad. I mean, definitely would be disappointed if I never got it. But, you know, that's a very real possibility. I don't know how much longer I'd be playing live. So, like, you know, if I play 4 or 5 more WSOPs and just break everything, maybe I find something else to do. So, yeah, it's definitely a very real possibility. But, you know, you show up every day just hoping if you play your best, you'll get that chance one day.
What's your definition of success today, and how has that evolved over the years?
For me, success is just having a life where I get to do things I enjoy and be around people I want to be around. And then also, like, having success inside of a professional endeavor is, of course, important, I think. And I wouldn't want to lose that. But to me, now it's more about trying to, I guess, strike a bit of a better balance and maybe focus more on things that I was neglecting a lot over the last few years just because I was so focused on playing a lot of poker every day.
I think success is something related to happiness. I think success is really, really person dependent. I would say for you, being successful means one thing. For me, it will be another thing. The feeling that you have inside of you that you are happy about something you have put effort on and that you have achieved one goal. For example, I think I'm really happy of how I did it in the challenge, even though I made so many mistakes and there are a lot of things I would have changed. But because I feel I gave everything, and it's something that for me is a success, even though the results probably could be better, could be worse for sure, But for me, it was a success because I have this feeling in my mind or feeling inside of me that I put all the effort I could and I did mostly the best I could do during that time. Because, of course, I could have done better. But I will think and I will guess that my future 2 years will say the same for me right now. So I think this is success for me.
I do try to work hard. So I try to put in effort to study and work hard and just kind of focus on that and sort of like create a life for myself where I can do kind of what I want to do and also having like a good life. Then I guess I haven't thought too much about it though, what success means, but like sort of like being fulfilled. Like I know with myself that I have to put in effort and I have to sort of keep going uphill. Otherwise, if I stagnate, I will be super depressed. So, yeah, I have to work hard to sort of like feel like I'm successful in some way.
You have to almost earn that feeling. So for you, let's say you do stagnate. Let's say you have a period where you don't feel like you're working hard. How is that kind of depressed feeling manifest for you?
Just the feeling of stagnation or like declining is just, I don't know. It's just, it always makes me like super, super depressed. Like I have to sort of like do something, you know, do something with my life. Otherwise it's just, it's a bad feeling for sure. It's almost this scary imagination of yourself being, let's say 45, 50 years old with nothing going for you, like, not wealthy, not like having anything, just like that's like a very scary feeling for me, you know. So I sort of like I need to sort of prevent that from happening.
Well, in poker it's sort of hard to define success, so for me I guess it's just feeling at the end of the day like I, you know, reached my potential in terms of how well I can play, how many days I can play my best. You know, you'll always have bad days, but for me, it's something you can control for the most part. So, you know, if I'm having a stretch where I'm just playing like my C game every other day, that's when I don't feel successful. That's when I feel like I have a lot of things to improve. But if I show up every day and I feel like I'm playing as well as I can, I feel successful regardless of if the results are coming or they're not. For me, the results, you know, they are what they are. They're sort of disconnected from, you know, how well you're playing at the time.
It's changed quite a lot. Before, the definition of success for me, for example, would be to play the high stakes, if we're talking about cash games. And now, I think the definition of success for me is to be happy with where you are. You just need to decide for yourself where you want to be. But it's like always your personal choice. There is no meaning in life, so like you can put whatever meaning into it. If it's like playing cash games at 1K, 2K, like so be it. You can find meaning into that, like it's whatever. So yeah, for me success is to be happy about myself, being proud about myself, and the things which makes me proud of myself, it's like kind of it's the stuff I am deciding for myself, like the amount of work I want to put in, or like the amount, the level of mastery of excellence I want to have in the game. Like I kind of have my own ideas and so self-satisfaction.
Coming up in the next episode.
I think there's a misconception on how much variance there is in live poker cash games. I think people underestimate that so much.
I know. I understand the variance, and I know that it doesn't matter what you do in a day.
That was like actually like a very good
good advice, because I feel like a lot of poker players really need that.
It really made my life more enjoyable.
I have just been way too much of a calling station. I think it comes from projection.
And he's probably just playing the spot way better, because the EV difference between B50, B75 or whatever is just, you know, nothing, right?
In my mind, there is no difference between a GTO play and the exploitative play, because exploit is a GTO with node locks, so it's kind of the same thing.